You're listening to highlights of the Creative Processes interview with writer-showrunner Alexi Hawley, creator of the shows The Rookie and The Recruit. This podcast is supported by the Jan Michalski Foundation.
I mean, the funniest thing is that when I first sort of got attached to this project and was talking to this guy named Adam Sawalsky, who the show was loosely inspired by, he was a lawyer at the CIA right out of law school. He's an editor at Vanity Fair now. But one of the first things he said to me was that the CIA is not sexy. It's the post office with secrets, which I was like, I've never seen that version of it before. The fact that there are all these different agendas going on, but there's also a sense of not wanting to know. There's a great scene in the first season where they're in a staff meeting at the general counsel's office. And everybody's talking about the person in the place with the thing. And when Owen starts to give specifics, everybody runs out of the room because they don't want his shit on their shoes. Like, you can get subpoenaed if you know something you're not supposed to know. And so I thought that was really fascinating, that it wasn't just all hands on deck, everybody's on the same team, that there was a lot of stuff going on that if you don't know what you're doing can be really dangerous. It's just fascinating about living in the real of it all, you know, which again, same thing with Rookie. Most cop shows live in a very TV version. And we do what we can to be authentic and to make it at least feel real. You know, you can't be real with everything because it's just not good TV. But the same thing with this is like to make the rooms that they're in, the conversations that they're having. The fact that in season two, Owen is very invested in the new Gray Mailer's journey and what he's fighting for. And his boss is like, we're not the Red Cross. Our job is to protect the CIA. And this guy has it out for us. And so just to really see that struggle where it's got layers was, I thought, really interesting. There used to be a time where leading men were okay with falling down as a character. Harrison Ford, Indiana Jones, is a prime example of that. They understand that failure and falling down but getting back up, that is an endearing quality. It's a human universal quality. And we have gotten to a point in the last 10 or 15 years or maybe longer where leading men often want to win every fight. It's in their contract rider, like, I have to win every fight, or can't fail or can't fall down. And it's just such a mistake because the audience roots for you more if they see you fail and then get back up again. And Noah is totally comfortable playing that character who's just trying to figure it out on the fly. And sometimes he gets it wrong, but he's never going to give up. And it's really, I think you feel that coming off the screen. What I have found over the years is honestly the moments, because we have a writer on staff on Rookie who was a police officer for 18 years, San Jose Police Department, wounded, I think, 32 times in the line of duty. Like, he knows what he's talking about. And oftentimes the stories that he tells that we then turn into cases or episodes, we get pushback on that they're not believable. And same thing can happen on Recruit too, right? And you're like, no, but that actually happened. It's the truth is stranger than fiction thing, which more often than not does turn out to be true, that some things that are wildly improbable or coincidental actually are real. The Rookie is a patrol show, right? Most television cop shows, procedurals over the last decade or two have been investigative shows, right? So there's a murder in Act One and they solve it in Act Six. And the episode is about that case. Whereas for us, and I think it's one of the reasons that we get to do so many different things is because every time they get out of their patrol car, anything can happen. Because that's true for cops. Like, they don't know from one minute to the next what's going to happen when they show up. Is it going to be funny? Is it going to be scary? Is it going to be overwhelming? All those kind of things. And so it gives us a lot of ability to tell different stories about policing. And I created the show in the shadow of the murder of Philando Castile, who was a black man who was pulled over. And if you remember that horrible video, you never actually saw the cop that came up to his car, but you heard the fear in his voice. And that fear had nothing to do with the man in the car. It had to do with what he brought to him, with him, right, on that traffic stop. My sort of idealistic idea coming in to The Rookie was, let me see about creating a show where we can be aspirational, right? Where cops can do the job the right way. There's a moment in the pilot where there's a man who shut down Hollywood Boulevard. He's having a mental episode. He's waving a bat around standing on a car. And police officers often shoot people in mental distress, especially ones who are armed. And so because Nathan's character, John Nolan, spoke to him, he realized that the guy was having a mental breakdown, partly because he had parked his car with his young child in it and couldn't remember where he parked. And so we saved the kid because we talked to the guy. So we always tried to talk about things during the show, unfair sentencing laws and stuff like that, and also how cops deal with it. Obviously, after the murder of George Floyd, we had a bit of a come to Jesus internally about the show. I actually asked a few writers to go give us a report card on how we had done in the first two seasons in terms of policing issues. And for the the most part, we had done well. There was a few instances where a cop celebrated getting a no-knock warrant, which basically means the cops can kick your door in without identifying themselves. But it did feel like we had created a version of policing which was alien to a lot of people. That's not their experience, right? Their experience, as you said, not everybody's always happy to see the police when they show up for a variety of reasons. So we really leaned into, starting in season three, like, how do we talk about injustice in the justice system? And how do we keep that issue alive when the spotlight that landed after George Floyd's murder goes away? Because, of course, we all know that they burn bright and then it mostly, sadly, goes back to the status quo. So I'm like, I want to still be talking about this year, next year. So we still try very much to be conscious of the issues around policing when we create these cases. We talked about in season three, especially because that was right after George Floyd. Like, we did an episode where LAPD does have these community policing centers all over LA, but a lot of them are in sort of lower income neighborhoods, but they really don't service them much. And they're sometimes more often for show than anything else. And so we had Nolan and his training officer land there. And there was a moment where the community organizer who ran it saw Nolan trying to fix some stuff up in a park and kind of called him out on it. He's putting up security cameras because the park had been graffitied. And basically this idea that the police bring rookies to these kind of neighbors to say, that's what a drug dealer looks like. That's what a drug addict looks like. And they're usually neighborhoods of color and they're low income neighborhoods. So you're training police officers, both consciously and subconsciously, to think certain ways when they see people. And, you know, what was interesting is during that episode, as we were working on the script and everything, that one of our executives at ABC wanted to warn me to be careful of the white savior model. And I actually was like, I'm glad you said that. I actually don't want to run away from that. I think we should call him out for that, because I think his expectation, his understanding of this neighborhood that he just showed up at 5 minutes ago is somehow more valuable than the people who live there. So we actually have him being told, like, you just need to listen. You need to ask the people here what they need, not go, oh, well, we need to put up security cameras to catch more people who, you know, that sort of idea was really, again, I think worthy of talking about. But also, I mean, one of the big things that we had to navigate as well during season three was, how do we not lose what our show is, which is at times goofy and silly and fun. Like, we didn't want to become a different show while we talked about these issues. So how do we navigate that? Which I'm really proud of, because I think we did a good job of that, of talking about things that were important, but never becoming preachy, because you help nobody if they just turn you off, right? Instead of watching. So one of the biggest issues with policing in the US, at least, is that policing is a catch-all for society's problems. And a lot of them police don't have the training for, especially on the mental health side. People call the police for everything. And tragically, it goes sideways a lot. You'll get somebody calling about a special needs son or kid or somebody who's having a mental issue. And sadly, a lot of times it takes a horrible turn. And a lot of that is because the police just simply have not gotten the training to truly understand how to navigate. De-escalation is something that's not pushed enough in police training. And again, there's thousands, if not tens of thousands, of different police departments inside the United States. And there is no one set of how they do things. So California does stuff differently than Texas, does some differently than New York. But even within New York, Texas, and California, individual police departments in individual cities can have different priorities and different training. So that lack of uniformity and that lack of pushing de-escalation and listening over, I mean, we talked to a bunch of people when we were trying to figure out how to be a cop show still after George Floyd, one of which was a police officer in South Carolina named Patrick Skinner, who actually ironically used to work at the CIA and then quit because he felt like he could be more useful local than global. But one of the things that he was talking about is that, you know, there was a case where this 10 or 12 year old kid who's playing with a toy gun in a park got shot. And, you know, one of the things that Patrick pointed out was, like, there were so many different ways to de-escalate that. Police have loudspeakers in their car. They could have parked halfway up the block and told him to put that gun down. Like, it didn't need to get to a place like that. And there are often times where a 911 call will come in and it gets relayed through a dispatcher. There's often not enough information, but they always give cops the phone number that called them. So what Patrick started doing was actually calling the person who made the phone call in the first place and to go, I'm the responding officer. What's going on? If there's somebody in your house, is he still there? Because if he's left and the cops don't know that, they're coming in looking for trouble. That kind of stuff where there's just preemptive things that can get done that just, they're just not part of the training that cops get. Especially now culturally, like, we're in such a selfish period. I mean, part of it's just designed around social media, which is so much about pushing a version of yourself out there. And if you don't have a version of yourself out there that's popular, like, you're not popular and you're not worthy and all that kind of stuff. And so I did have a moment with Nathan's character, where you just talked about putting yourself second sometimes, which is not meant to be unhealthy mentally, like don't become subservient to somebody else's desires. But at times you just need to hold a space for other people's experiences. You might be going through something that I don't know about and just being generous in that. And then sometimes also going, my needs are being met. What do you need? And let me put you first in this moment. And I feel like we've gotten away from that sort of charitable idea in our society. And it's just become so. And again, especially with the guy who's coming into the White House in 5 days, it's just all so mean-spirited and selfish that you're like, as long as you're in good shape, it costs you nothing to listen, to be generous, to be all those kind of things.
Oh,
well, everything's best done by humans. I'm like, has nobody watched Terminator? Like, we all know where this is going, right? It's not going in a good way. But no, I mean, it has been interesting because obviously TikTok especially, but any of the sort of short video formats are really designed to rewire people's brains. But yet at the same time, storytelling has been part. I mean, people love being entertained and they have since cavemen or whatever. Like it's always been part of our culture, whether it's Shakespeare or whether it's Greek plays or all that stuff. So I still think that people have space for longer form storytelling. I do know I have 4 kids and the youngest is 17, so they're mostly older. But what they watch mostly are things like Psych and Criminal Minds and The New Girl and The Office and Friends. And like, those are all older shows, but there's a lot of them. I mean, it's part of the argument of network versus streaming and the fact that Rookie now has 120 something probably, or 30 something by the end of season 7. But episodes is that they're comfort food. You know, I mean, my kids are part of the anxiety generation, right? They grew up from whether it was 9/11 or whether it was the financial crash in 2008 or the pandemic or so many different things, and Trump won and all that. And so I think people are desperate for sort of distraction, which I think is where TikTok really is unfortunate, but also just something comforting. And I think that a lot of these sort of shows, that there's so many episodes, you can just watch them, you can put them on the background every season of, let's say, The Office, like 16 times, like they just start again. And I think some of that is really the comfort of it all, which is not the same as folding laundry TV, which is what some people have called some of the procedurals. I just think that these characters are in their house all the time and they're comforting to them. And so they just like watching them over and over again as something to center themselves on, if that makes sense. It used to be that there was a clear delineation in people's minds between a movie star and a TV star. And part of it was the TV star is somebody you're inviting into your home every week, right? As opposed to, let's say, Tom Cruise, you're going to a movie theater to see on screen. There's sort of a bigger persona. Your connection to them is different than watching Nathan Fillion on The Rookie or on Castle or some of the older TV stars and stuff like that, is that you are making them part of your inner circle because they're in your house every week. And I do think that still applies, although people are watching more and more movies at home. And I think that delineation is falling off. But I mean, I do think at the end of the day, people's connection to TikTok and short form video is, I mean, look, my kids talk about little TikTok videos from 6 years ago that are still stuck with them. So it's not like they don't impact people, but most of it is just throwaway stuff that triggers a few endorphins and then you move on to the next thing and stuff like that. But I don't think it sticks with you the way an impactful piece of television or movies does.
We hope you've enjoyed listening to these highlights. To listen to the latest episodes or learn more about participating in exhibitions or interviews, click on subscribe. Thank you for listening.